1966 in AAA. Brought me the Cardinals after those 2 years in the minor leagues to promote Schofield to major club for the 1957 season. However, here is a problem for Ducky. The Cardinals already had an established star shortstop called Alvin Dark, so Schofield wasn't going to play ahead of him. They also had an up-and-coming young star second baseman called Don Blasingame. Schofield wasn't going to play ahead of him. They also had a star third baseman called Kim Boyer, who wasn't going to play ahead of him. So Ducky was relegated to a bench-warmer role, not all that much differently than the role he held as a bonus game before. He rarely started a game at all for the Cardinals in 57. He was deployed by manager Fred Hutchinson basically as another year of being a bonus game. Even when, in the mid-57 season, Hutchinson transferred Ken Boyer from third base to center field, Ducky didn't get the job at third base. Third base instead, the job went to a minor league journeyman named Casco, while he sat on the bench. But then, in May of 1958, the Cardinals trade away Alvin Dark, and this opens up the starting shortstop job for our hero Ducky. He plays pretty much as the regular shortstop for the Cardinals from May and June of 58. Does not hit well. He's 213 and without power, but true to his form, draws a lot of walks, 340 on base percentage. So he's not doing well, but he's not doing terribly either for a first-time regular 23-year-old shortstop. You think this might be a promising beginning, they might want to stick with him. But no. General Manager Big Devine trades Ducky in June of 58 to the Pirates. In exchange, basically, for Dean Freese. Freese was a good young ball player. Freese was an infielder who didn't have power, some defensive shortcomings, but a good prospect, considered one of the better young infielders in the game. So Schofield was obviously well thought of. Why exactly the Cardinals made this trade, I don't know. They had no use for Freese, but they never traded Schofield for Freese in June 58. Is this going to be Ducky's big chance? I'm afraid not. The Pirates had an established star shortstop, Dick Groat. They also had an established star second baseman, Bill Mazeroski. They also had an established star third baseman, Frank Thomas, who would soon be traded for another established star third baseman, Don Hope. There was no place for Ducky to play in Pittsburgh either. And so, as deployed by manager Dave Murtaugh in 1958, '59, and '60, Ducky was a benchwarmer. He was, not just a utility man, he was a benchwarmer. He basically rode the bench for the Pirates through those years. Until we come to September of 1960. 1960, Pirates finally put it all together. They're leading the National League. They're first place in every September of 1960 with Ducky on the bench. But what happens? In early September, Dick Groat gets hit by a pitch. Breaks a finger, out of the lineup. This could be Ducky's big break. And that pun is entirely intended. Ducky steps in for the Pirates, and not only does he fill Dick Groat's shoes, he more than fills Dick Groat's shoes. He goes 27 for 68 down the stretch from 1960, plus 10 walks. That's about a 400 batting average. He was tremendous down the stretch of 58. The Pirates end up winning the pennant in the cakewalk. But what happens on the next to the last day before the regular season? Dick Groat's thumb heals. He's back in the lineup for the World Series. So in that scintillating seven-game World Series against the Yankees, the Pirates eventually won a Bill Mazeroski's famous walk-off, Ducky was once again watching it from the bench. As he would continue to do in 1961 and 62, Groat was named MVP, probably not the wisest award for vote ever, but still, he was considered a major star. And there was nothing to Schofield to do. Schofield right at the bench for the Pirates again in 1961 and 62. But then, and this is Schofield doing what he can to keep busy. Finally, following the 1962 season, the Pirates trade Groat to the Cardinals, opening up the regular shortstop position finally for Dick Groat, fully 10 years after he signed as a bonus day. And Groat is the regular shortstop for the Pirates in 1963 and 64. He doesn't set the world on fire, but he does pretty good. He's all right. His batting average in both 63 and 64 was 246, which for a major league shortstop in those years was at least average. He drew walks above average. So he's a pretty good offensive player, and capable of it. But in early 1965, he's off a little bit of a slow start. The Pirates have a young slick-fielding shortstop named Gene Alley coming along, so in Day 65, the Cardinals, or I'm sorry, the Pirates, trade Ducky to the Giants, straight out of the exchange for Jose Pagan. Pagan had been the Giants' regular shortstop since 1961, and had a really good year for the Giants in 62, but declined precipitously following that, so the Giants were frustrated with Pagan. We figured this is a great opportunity to upgrade their shortstop position. Schofield's installed as the Giants' regular shortstop. Through the 1965 season, I'm afraid to tell you Schofield does terribly. So bad, in fact, that after being Giants regular through most of that season, in the final crucial stretch month of September of 1965, Schofield was basically on the bench, and the Giants instead went with utility man Jim Davenport and rookie Tito Fuentes at shortstop. Schofield, in fact, could be considered one of the biggest goats of the Giants in 1965. That Schofield simply hit the way he established he could with the Pirates in 63 and 64. It's very likely the Giants pick up the two wins they needed to tie the Dodgers in 65, and we might have seen the Giants play the Twins in the 65 World Series. We did not. Early in the 1966 season, Schofield fails to make the Giants' first-string roster, and so in May of 66, they sell Schofield to the New York Yankees. Now, the 1966 New York Yankees, you may be aware of, were the infamous New York Yankees who finished in last place. Quite a tumble from their dynastic heights. The Yankees in 66 were a team with some needs, and they had a particular need at shortstop. They had a big hole at shortstop, and they told them who was retired. Schofield, the job was there for Schofield to take. However, Schofield was bothered by a leg injury in 66, and he's finally ready to play in the summer of 66. He just completely fails to hit yet again, second straight year. So the Yankees turn to Horace Clark as their primary shortstop for the 1966 season. Finally, September, the Yankees still in the depths of the American League, just basically dump off Schofield, trading him to the Dodgers for a minor league journeyman pitcher named Thad Tillotson. Now, why did the Dodgers acquire Schofield in 1966? They already had Maury Wills at shortstop, no starting opportunity for Becky there, but Dodgers had a problem at third base. They had the great veteran Jim Gilliam in his final season. By 1966, it was pretty apparent that Gilliam wasn't up to the job anymore. They had hoped that a young player named John Kennedy would step in, and Kennedy proved to be great with the glove, but terrible with the bat. So Dodgers had a problem. And of course, for the second straight year, they're engaged in an excruciating close pick race with the Giants. So manager Walter Alston installs Ducky as his primary third baseman through the final month of 1966. What does Schofield do? He does pretty well. Doesn't hit for any power, but once again, 350 on base percentage. Dodger State in 1966, a 350 on base percentage is excellent. Schofield was, in fact, a major factor, but a significant contributor to the Dodgers' great September, nipping the Giants for the second straight year, this time with Schofield on the winning side. Why there had been no congressional investigation of his malfeasance on the part of Schofield in 1965 and 66, I don't know. But he stuck for the Giants in 65, came through for the Dodgers in 66, the Dodgers win the pennant, and Schofield once again gets the win in the series. Because he joined the Dodgers after September 1st, he was not eligible to be on the active roster for the World Series, but he witnessed it from the bench nonetheless. In 1967, the Dodgers traded Maury Wills, opening up the shortstop job for Ducky. He shares the shortstop job for the Dodgers in 67 with fellow good field no-hit shortstop Gene Stickmichael. They basically platooned in 67. You know, it's very well, but they handled the job adequately. Nonetheless, in that fall of 67, the Dodgers in a youth movement give Schofield his release. So this might be the end of the line for our friend Ducky, but no. His old team, the Cardinals, invite him to spring training for 1968. Schofield makes the roster, they sign him on April 1st. Schofield spends the 1968 season backing up the Cardinals' double play combination of Dal Maxwell and Boone Jenner. Schofield has a pretty good year for the Cardinals in 68. He's a solid, dependable utility infielder. The Cardinals win the pennant. Schofield for the third time in the 1960s is for the National League pennant winning team and gets to play a little bit in the 1968 World Series. Following that season, the Red Sox make a trade for Ducky, trading German pitcher Gary Roslewski to the Cardinals for Ducky. The Red Sox at that time had a very good middle-infield combination. They had Rico Petrocelli short of right field in the second. Some defensive issues for these guys, but both of them can go again. Schofield is the backup for these guys in both 1969 and 1970 for the Red Sox. Once again, that's pretty well. He's a solid, capable utility infielder, even though by this time he's in his mid-30s. Finally, following the 1970 season, the Cardinals yet again acquired Ducky, trading minor league first baseman Jim Campbell to acquire Ducky. The Cardinals still have Maxwell short, but now they have Ted Seisler at second base, so there's no regular opportunity for Schofield, but once again, he is a capable utility infielder. But in July of 1971, the Cardinals trade Schofield to the Milwaukee Brewers. An interesting trade. The Cardinals traded Jose Cardenal along with Schofield and a pitcher named Bob Reynolds to the Brewers for infielder Ted Kubiak. One can question why the Cardinals wanted to trade Jose Cardenal to Ted Kubiak, but nonetheless they did. Why the Brewers at this point, a third-year expansion team, would be acquiring a 36-year-old infielder, I don't know either, but perhaps it's explained by the fact that the Brewers general manager would have been Frank Trader Lane, and he liked to make trades. So Schofield spent the rest of the 71 season backing up Ron Theobald as the second baseman in the Brewers. Finally, at the end of the 71 season, Ducky is given his release, and his 19 years in the majors have finally come to an end. In the first game in which Schofield played for the Cardinals back in 1953, in the Cardinals lineup alongside him was pitcher Alpha Brazen. Now, Brazen was born in 1913. Let me tell you what 1913 was. When Brazen was born, Henry Ford had not yet installed his first assembly line. The film career of Charlie Chaplin had not yet begun. And some kid named George Ruth was still enrolled in St. Mary's Industrial School. In Ducky's last game with the Brewers at the end of the 1971 season, he was in the lineup alongside a rookie catcher by the name of Darryl Porter. When Porter was still playing in the major leagues, when NASA was contracting to build a permanently manned Earth orbiting space station, Michael Jackson was releasing the album Bad on compact disc, and The Simpsons was on television. The link between these, I'm going to tell you, is Ducky Schofield. Schofield was never a great player, obviously, but this is a list of the Hall of Fame players who were teammates of Ducky Schofield. Lou Gehrig, Steve Carlton, Orlando Cepeda, Roberto Clemente, Don Dreyfus, Whitey Ford, Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax, Mickey Mantle, Juan Marichal, Willie Mays, Bill Mazeroski, Willie McCovey, Stan Musial, Gaylord Perry, Red Shandies, who also managed the Schofield, Willie Slaughter, Warren Spahn, Willie Stargell, Don Sutton, and Hoyt Wilhelm, and of course, Thomas Kirsten, quite the list of Hall of Famers. He was also managed by two Hall of Fame managers, Dick Williams and Walt Austin, and James as well as the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure whether there's a player's in there, but so Schofield had a lot of Hall of Fame goal running to do in his 19 years. Schofield had a son who played in the major leagues. He also had a daughter named Kim, who was a great athlete in her own right. She was a U.S. Olympic trial finalist as a sprinter. Kim Schofield has a son named Jason Worth, who is Ducky Schofield's grandson, still playing in the major leagues. Of course, Dick Schofield's son, Dick Schofield, also played in the major leagues. Also was a shortstop. Also was a shortstop who had a difficult time hitting for average, but was pretty good at getting on base with walks. The younger Schofield played 14 years in the major leagues, mostly as a regular, but also as a utility man. My opinion is that the elder Schofield, had he had better opportunities, would have been a regular player in the major leagues as well. Both of these players, amassing nearly 10,000 major league play appearances between them, both of them have a career OPS plus of exactly 73. And guess what kind of a player Ducky's father, John Schofield, was as a minor league ball player? He was a shortstop, was good defensively, but had difficulty hitting for average and continuing to throw a lot of balls. So, if in fact Jason Wirt ever stops being a power hitting outfielder, starts emerging as a shortstop, can hit for average and draw walks, don't say he didn't see it. He never was a major league coach, but he's been quite active in the Springfield. He's been back Springfield, quite active in the Springfield, Illinois community. In fact, he serves on sort of a board of directors for youth athletics in Springfield. Still alive. He's 77 years old.
So I'm wondering if, Steve, if you've ever thought of doing an article for Hardball Times somehow quantifying those marginal players that struck around the wall. Coach Reed or whatever, you know, 15 or more seasons, seeing that ranking might be interesting.
It sure would. Like I said, I'm not positive that Ducky would be at the top of that list, but he'd be on it. He played in 19 seasons of major leagues, only three as a regular, and only one of those seasons did he have 500 at bats. So the vast majority of his time he spent in major leagues sitting on the bench.
Steve, Schofield was one of those people. I did a presentation a couple years ago on players who were born in the 30s when there were much fewer people playing. And Schofield was able to be one of the larger, one of the more important recipients of that big bust during the 1930s. He was, you know, he was the right prime age when they expanded. And then as they expanded again, there were very, very few players who were between the ages of 25 and 35 relative to the overall history of baseball. Schofield was a prime recipient of getting good playing time well into his 30s when other players, both more and older, would have ended up essentially.
Yeah, I mean, his career is an odd combination of good fortune and bad fortune. And he was fortunate to make the major leagues because of the bonus rule, otherwise he'd be in the minors. You know, he was a good enough ball player to continue to remain in the major leagues, and expansions obviously helped him. But he just had the bad fortune of being stuck behind established shortstops. It's my opinion. The Cardinals were nuts to trade Schofield for the Pirates in 58 for Gene Freese, who they did not need, when they had a problem shortstop. Schofield should have been the Cardinals' regular shortstop until Maxwell was in the mid-60s. I think that was the smart one.
Well, then they have Bobby Brown.
Then they have to trade Bobby
Brown to fill their shortstop.
Well, it seems to me like he was, you know, quite lucky or fortunate, as you point out in many cases. What attributes did he have as a player that aren't obvious in the statistics that to allow him to be able to do what he did?
He was a switch hitter, which obviously helped keep you on the roster if you could back up. He was a middle infielder, which means he could play only shortstop or second base and third, so he's got defensive versatility. I haven't done any analysis of this, but I'm very confident in saying he did the little things well, probably punt well. Any guy who takes that many rosters is impressing the manager as a handy guy to have around. There's never a hint of any problems with his personality, off-field issues, whatever. He's a good guy. Obviously, coming from a baseball family, you know, steeped in the, you know, in the culture of the game, he was just sort of a handy guy to have around.
What's his fielding percentage for his career?
I don't know his fielding percentage, but I do know that most of the metrics would consider him either average or above average defensive shortstop. He was not a gold glover, but a capable shortstop.